Hey, welcome to Sex, Drugs, and Spirituality with Sydney DeLorean. That's me. I am recording while driving because the episode I recorded for you today, the file was more corrupt than the morally corrupt Faye Resnick, and I was unable to use it, and now I have to re-record the entire episode while driving, and I apologize if that is causing audio issues. Obviously, I take this podcast very seriously, or I'm hoping to, which is why I'm making sure to get an episode out to you today, even if it means recording this shit while driving. All right, here we go. I want to talk to you about the recent docuseries Quiet on Set, which is about pedophiles at Nickelodeon. This docuseries is available on Max, and that is how I watched it. It has about 5 episodes, and it focuses mostly on Dan Schneider, who was not the CEO or head of Nickelodeon during its heyday, but he was a show creator and showrunner. A lot of the shows I'm going to talk about, I'm not super familiar with because I'm 39 years old. So when Nickelodeon was having its heyday in the early aughts, I was drinking and watching Rock of Love. I was not watching Sam and Cat or Drake and Josh or The Amanda Show, but I was aware of them. And here's why. The aughts were a big time of celebrity gossip. Perez Hilton, D-listed, Oh No They Didn't, TMZ. It was a time where we didn't recognize that celebrities were human beings, and therefore we tried to destroy them with media coverage. And I think the best example of that is Britney Spears, Paris Hilton. A lot of these women we are now publicly apologizing to for what we did to them. I mean, it's crazy. And I was a gossip blog addict at the time. I didn't think there was anything wrong with calling Misha Barton, was she Barton, or Kirsten Dunst, Kirsten Drunkst. The way that these women were treated is kind of crazy in retrospect, but it was a very, very misogynistic time. This third wave feminism where women were supposed to be super sexual without any emotional connection to sex, the Girls Gone Wild era. Women were devoured for public consumption and weren't supposed to have emotional ties to it. It's kind of crazy, and I think it reeks of internalized misogyny. And it's something I still grapple with today. I who knows how much of that has to do with my inability to maintain female friendships. I have like 3. And I love them deeply, even though I never see them or speak to them. It was a wild time. So I was aware of who Dan Schneider was because when Jamie Lynn Spears, who had a show on Nickelodeon, got pregnant at 16 and quit her show, it was rumored that Dan Schneider was the father of her baby. And all of the gossip blogs called him a pedophile, and it was like an open secret in Hollywood. Like, this guy's a fucking pedophile. He's the creator showrunner on Zoe 101, and he's obviously the father of Jamie Lynn Spears' baby, and people today still believe that. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was kind of like how before the Me Too era, everybody knew Harvey Weinstein was a creep. Sorry, Oprah, you can't act like you didn't hear the whispers about it and then shocked that your friend Harvey Weinstein was a sexual predator. Because if Sydney DeLorean in Phoenix, Arizona, with an internet connection, knew that he raped Gretchen Mol, then how the fuck did you not know? And that's the thing about predators, is where there's smoke, there's fire. There's a lot to be said for that, that people don't want to admit the ugly truth of reality, so they pretend it's not true or real. But I come from the school of Trust No Bitch. I graduated from Trust No Bitch University. And I, again, I'm 39 years old. I've had enough life experience to verify that you should trust no bitch. In my first recording of this, I discussed at the end about how when I was raped as a teenager, I had heard whispers of this guy being a rapist. And this one woman who he allegedly raped, we were all in the gutter punk scene. It's cringe, all right? It's cringe. I asked her, I heard that Gobo raped you. And she didn't know me, like, at all. And so here I am asking about a sexual assault. And she said, no, like, we had rough sex. That's what the scratches are from. If anyone's talking about it, or the scratches, or, you know, the marks on me, it's because we had rough sex. That's all it is. Like, I don't want to talk about it. And I believed her at face value because I didn't understand the complexities of victimhood and how it's hard for people to admit that they were sexually assaulted or victimized, let alone to fucking strangers, let alone to be under that scrutiny. So you just kind of deny and pretend it didn't happen. And that is how I, as a 16-year-old, ended up drinking at a 23-year-old's apartment, who then violently raped me. That's how that fucking happened, because I was a dumb fuck, because, again, I was 16, and I didn't understand that where there's smoke, there's fire, and you got to watch your back. Don't be left alone with no one. Now as an adult, I don't fuck with being alone with anybody. I don't even like being alone with my own thoughts. That's why I have a dog. I will meet y'all in a public space. So anyways, there's always been rumors about this Dan Schneider guy. However, he's never had any charges pressed against him. All right, I'm going to ease into it, because a lot of the stuff they bring up in the documentary doesn't really seem that sus. It could be innocuous. And then we're going to build up to the actual fucking pedophile assaults and creeps. But I think it's interesting that they put in these minor things that I honestly think aren't a big deal, but it's a good example of how you slowly turn the heat up. You don't drop a frog in a pot of boiling water, it jumps out. You put it in the water and you slowly turn the heat up, and that is how abuse works. Okay, so first allegation is that Dan Schneider has a foot fetish. During his rule at Nickelodeon, their logo was a foot. I think it's weird to automatically assume that anything involving a foot is a foot fetish. Again, during this time, like, you know, people have beach towels with flip-flops on it. People have necklaces with flip-flops on them. Christians have that goddamn footprints poem everywhere. Like, feet are kind of a thing that you see places, in the same way that you see, like, mustaches as, like, a kitschy joke. Like, you see a foot, kitschy joke. Nickelodeon's whole thing was they weren't educational, they weren't wholesome, they were kind of wacky, gross out kid humor. And so feet, I think, are kind of, is a good symbol for that genre, because people are fucking weird about feet. People are like, oh, feet are gross, feet weird me out, oh, you got your foot up on the thing. And I think overall people need to be less weird about feet. I used to never show my feet in public unless I was at the beach. Like, I used to be very weird about that. I never wore flip-flops. I thought it was weird. I always got pedicures and stuff, but I never showed my fucking feet to anybody. And I think that's so weird, especially, you know, I've spent the past year staring at feet as a Pilates instructor. Traditionally, Pilates is done barefoot. Modern studios, a lot of them make you wear grip socks. It's not for the grip. It's not because that's safe. It's actually to cut down on foot fungus transmission. But traditionally Pilates is done barefoot, and I now do it and teach it barefoot, because I've become a big proponent of foot function, barefoot training. This is a long story that has nothing to do with this, but I'm like very pro feet. Show your feet, take care of your feet, unleash your feet, because feet are meant to be as mobile as hands. And, the fact that we wear shoes that are not even shaped like feet, and they basically paralyze and immobilize their feet. I've had multiple foot surgeries, which is why, another reason why I would never be barefoot before. I have a really rare bone deformity in my feet. If you're an anatomy dork, my talus and my navicular are completely fused. It's one bone. Less than 0.01% of the population has this deformity. It's probably my hillbilly, well, especially according to my mom, it's my hillbilly Appalachian ancestors on my dad's side. Because, of course, it couldn't possibly be her side of the family who claim they're descended from English nobility. Sure, Jan. Anyways, I've had surgery for it because the navicular sticks out on the side. And looks like I have two ankles, but I had that surgery done when I was really young. I spent a summer with my feet, both my feet in casts, and then the bone grew back because I was a child and my bones were still growing. But it affected my figure skating, and I'd have to have my skates customized, and then it would, whatever. It was a whole thing. And it still is a thing that if I skate too long, I get blisters and like my boots fill with pus. But it's not going to stop me from getting after it. Now I do physical therapy exercises and training for my feet to strengthen them and just try to get as much mobility out of my foot as possible. And as I've gone through this journey of research and rehab, I'm like, man, why do we wear shoes that aren't shaped like feet? It's because they look fucking cool. I love shoes. I'm a sneakerhead, okay? But I don't get to be anymore because I'm trying to have healthy feet rather than styling ones. But anyways, free the feet. That's all I'm saying. We got to free the feet. And so the idea that a bare foot is inherently sexual is kind of crazy to me. They're like, oh, they would have foot gags on the shows because Dan Snyder has a foot fetish. And I'm like, or is it just because feet are like a mild taboo, right? It's not, feet are like crazy because people are like, oh my God, it's a foot. Oh, your naked foot. Ew, get your foot out of here. Like if you were a kid and you were trying to fuck with your friend, you're like chilling on the couch, watching movies, eating pizza. You would like take your shoe and sock off and like put your foot in your friend's face and be like, he's my foot. And the friend would be like, oh my God, it's a foot. Like that's not inherently sexual. And to like claim that any foot is inherently sexual is crazy. And I think that the people who see that as inherently sexual, it's almost like, are you suspecting that that's sexual because you see it as sexual? Like when I was a kid growing up in church, we already know I was raised super religious. And back then women wore pantyhose. And if there was a woman sitting in our row of the pew and she like flicked her high heel off or would like kind of let it dangle off her toes and flick it around because she was bored as fuck, my stepdad would be like, she's like, he would say that that was like, she was sexually wanton. And that was like sexual deviant behavior, and that was her trying to get sexual attention by burying her foot in her pantyhose. And I'm like, no, it makes you horny. that's not an inherently sexual or deviant or wanton or lustful behavior. It's just that you are so sexually repressed that you are projecting sexuality or sexual desire where there actually is none. In the same way that we later found out, you know, 30 years later, that my stepdad is a pedophile. He never molested me, thank God. But it made sense on why he always was super worried about me being molested and claiming people were perverts or like looking at me weird or whatever, because he had those desires. So he was able to project them onto others. Like when the neighbor kid mooned me, my parents like were like sat me down and they were like, you were sexually assaulted, like this or that. And like, I was outside and he was inside his house and my friend and I were like playing a game where we were like, let's spy on the neighbor boy. And he mooned us because we were fucking being creeps. And then they claimed, because I saw a bare butt, that I was sexually assaulted. And I just want to say, like, not everything is sexual. Not every exposure of a human body is sexual. Breastfeeding isn't sexual. Nude sunbathing isn't sexual. Not everything is sexual. And this sort of religious oppression of sexuality has led people to see sex where it isn't. And it's kind of pathetic. Like, fucking go get laid and stop seeing horniness around every corner. You're just too pent up. So the foot stuff, I'm like, okay, maybe this isn't really that big of a deal. Dan Snyder had a foot-shaped pool. And then people are like, see, that's how strong his foot fetish is. His pool was shaped like a foot. I'm like, well, maybe it's just the logo for the company that he was thriving at was a foot. And that money that he got from creating all those shows at Nickelodeon's paid for the house and pool. So he got a foot-shaped pool because it was part of his identity. I don't know. Call me crazy. I don't think this is inherently sexual, but maybe. Okay. The next thing they claimed was inherently sexual was all the splat jokes. Nickelodeon's thing, even pre-Dan Schneider, was sliming people, dumping slime on people. Gross out humor, because again, this was children's entertainment that was meant to be purely for entertainment. It was not educational. It was not moral. It wasn't trying to teach you a lesson. Like, a lot of Disney movies read like mythology or parables. And then, you know, PBS is like super educational. This shit was not Arthur. It was not the Magic School Bus. This was just wacky, gross out kids TV. And so, like, you know, kids would sneeze and like snot would fly onto the other character's face. And this documentary posits that every single time one of those things happened, that it was a stand-in for a cum shot, which again, I don't think could possibly be true. Because like sometimes splat and grossness, it is just funny. Like, I work at a restaurant. I once spilt 2 gallons of albondigas soup and it was so gross. And I was like, my coworkers were laughing at me cleaning up. It was awful. They weren't laughing at the giant splat mess because it was like, oh, cum shot everywhere. It was just like, oh, this is gross and yucky. You know what I mean? Like, I've had people filling ranch containers, like drop it and it splats in their hair and you're like, ah, gross. And it's not because it was a something about Mary moment. It's just like, it's gross out humor, right? So to posit that you can't make any sort of liquid or viscous fluid based jokes with children involved because it's always synonymous or like representative of a cum shot is kind of crazy. But then this is how I guess you turn the heat up on that pot of water is during Dan Schneider's reign, there was a web series of Sam and Cat, and a lot of the scenes, especially the ones they show you involving Ariana Grande in this docuseries, literally look like a porn. because it's filmed in low res because it's on the web. And it's like there's her laying on her back with her head hanging off a mattress trying to like drink water, and it's just pouring all over her face. Yeah, that looks like porn. There's her trying to milk a potato. It looks like porn. Like, during this era, all of a sudden it went from sneeze and snot and boogers and goo and earwax, like stuff that is child appropriate, to all of a sudden like, oh no, this is like literally scenes that are in Bukkake films, but you have put children in place. Like, and it's crazy that their parents let them do this. Like, even if the kids themselves don't understand what it is, like, this is shit is on their permanent record. Like, I think it's inappropriate. I mean, I think all child actors should be played by adults. Like, all child roles should be played by adults. It should be played by Steve Buscemi in a backwards hat with a skateboard. It should be played by a grown adult, Matt Farley, as discussed years ago on one of these podcasts. All child roles should be played by a grown adult, because I don't think kids need to have jobs. If they do, it should be a paper route, and their parents should go with them so they don't get kidnapped. Hashtag Johnny Gosh. If children can have jobs, they can babysit. I worked at my church's daycare. They don't need to have full-time jobs, and then they have an on-set tutor that teaches them a little school in between breaks. Like, they're not even in a group classroom environment with their other kid, like co-stars. They're just getting a little tutoring in between shots. Kids don't need to be doing that. Kids, and developmental psychologists will tell you this, children should spend a lot of time around other children, engaging in social dynamics with each other, light parental supervision, because that's how they develop. Because of helicopter parents and social isolation, children now aren't getting a lot of time in groups together, unsocial, unsupervised. And developmental psychologists are seeing that it's affecting these children's ability to work together, socialize. Kids are getting social anxiety because they actually don't know how to interact around each other without like prompting from a parent or a child psychologist. Like, children are literally going to therapy to like get advice on how to make friends when they move out of their parents' house. And I was kind of a feral kid. Like, I would take the bus down to Mill Avenue and I would meet other gutter punks and be like, oh, you have a bad haircut. Oh, you're listening to Crass on your boombox. Let's get drunk together. And I'm not saying that's great. But I'm saying I'm pretty comfortable entering unfamiliar territory and making friends. So anyways, I don't think kids need to be having jobs. But also, when they have a job, why is no adult in the room being like, yeah, no, we can't, we're not having, my daughter's not going to milk a potato in what is clearly a reference to hand jobbing. Like, we're not doing this. It's not happening. Not on my watch. Is the allure of fame and fortune so big that like you're willing to let your boundaries be pushed? And I guess it is, because in every sex creep fucking episode I do, it's like someone being like, well, I wanted to report Larry Nassar, but it would have ruined my career. Okay, so your career is more important than children's lives. Being a bartender is not that bad. Being a cashier at Target is not that bad. I would rather be broke with a clear conscience than have a career and have to sleep at night knowing that I was allowing inappropriate things to happen to others. This is why I don't have a career, because I am unwilling to put up with bullshit for money. Especially if it's not great money. And so that's weird. It's weird that Dan Schneider came up with these ideas, and it's weird that the parents of the child actors allowed these things to be filmed, let alone the whole industry around them on set. But again, apparently it was just the culture at Nickelodeon that allowed this. The one thing Dan Schneider is definitively guilty of is being a terrible fucking boss. He claimed that women weren't funny, and the only woman who ever made him laugh was Amanda Bynes, who was 9 when he met her, and they would have writing meetings alone in his office. That's weird. Wonder how that turned out for her. Oh, she's been having a public meltdown for the past 15 years. That makes sense. He did hire 2 women to write on a show, but he made them split a salary. And the women allowed this because it was their first writing jobs. They wanted to get their foot in the door. They wanted to get a career going. This is, again, why I don't have a career, because if they were like, oh, we'll hire you to be a podcast producer, but you have to split a salary with someone else, I'd be like, nah, I'll just bartend. I got bills. Like, financial independence is more important to me than respect in my line of work. These women said, okay, we'll split a salary. That's fine. And that's what they did. And then one spoke to the Writers Guild about it, and they were like, no, that's like not okay. So for the next season, she was invited back to write, and she was offered a full salary, but she was offered a full salary for 16 episodes, but was expected to write for the entire season, which was 32 episodes. So again, being paid half of what she was required to be paid for doing her job. Also, Dan Schneider would message women, either writers, production assistants, costumers, and say, drop what you're doing. I need you to come to my office and massage me. They always with the massages, these guys. You're rich, homie. Get a massage therapist to come give you a massage. Oh, wait, it's not about the massage. It's about power. If my boss was like, hey, I need you to rub my shoulders, I'd be like, fuck no. How many cars do you own? How many homes do you own? Yeah, you can hire someone to give you a massage. Also, my current boss would never do that because he's not a piece of shit, which is why I've been at my job for 6 years, because my boss is like a nice person. But these women are like, oh, this guy's a piece of shit, but I want to get a career going in Hollywood. I'm lucky to have this job. I guess I'll go rub this fuckface's shoulders. It's so great. And because here's the thing. This guy is very like Lou Pearlman-esque. He's a fat fuck. He's got no neck. And it's one thing to be a fat fuck and you work in Des Moines and you sell insurance. It's another thing to be a fat fuck and work in Hollywood. Like, this guy was always a chunky monkey. When he was on Welcome Back, Kotter, his character was like the butt of fat jokes. And so I assume that affects one's self-esteem. Kind of like, I don't really feel bad about my body when I'm at work as a bartender, but when I was teaching Pilates 45 hours a week, I felt really bad about my body in that specific environment. I no longer work for that company, Club Pilates. And so I don't really worry about shit now when I teach fitness, because I work at like a nice studio where it's like normal people. But anyways, so I'm sure if he sold insurance in Des Moines, he would just be kind of the chubby guy in the office. But he is in Hollywood where everyone's expected to be an 11, and this guy's a fucking 2. And so then it probably drove him to be super successful and then use his power to sexually manipulate women who he couldn't get otherwise because he's a fat fuck. And so he's like, come give me a massage. And they're like, fuck, I gotta go fucking massage Dan. So he sucks. All right. There's Dan Schneider. He's a bad boss. He's a fucking asshole. He gets along a little too well with kids, but he's never been charged with pedophile shit. But you know who was charged with pedophile shit? Several of his employees. The first one was a production assistant who was in charge of escorting the children around set. This guy, I forget his name, I can't look it up because I'm driving. He had big youth pastor energy, and his last name was Handy, and he was like 23 at the time. And this woman was interviewed in the documentary. Her daughter was an extra on a show on Nick. And the guy was like, I'm going to exchange email addresses with you. And it's like 2003, and they just weren't. Technology kind of evolves quicker than we have an understanding and societal norms for it. So she didn't really know what was up with like this grown adult man, again, 23 years old, asking for her then like 9 or 10 year old's email address. And they exchanged a couple emails, and the mom read them, and they were totally innocuous. And so the mom was like, okay, this is fine. He's just giving her advice in Hollywood. The fuck I would let a 23-year-old, who when you're 40, 23-year-olds seem like kids, but when you see a 23-year-old next to your 9-year-old, that 23-year-old is a man, the fuck I would let a 23-year-old be emailing with my child. But she thought, okay, they're just, he's just a nice guy. He's just a good guy. He's filled with Christ's love. He's giving her career advice. Well, the emails went on and escalated to points of intimacy until one day he sent the daughter a photo of him masturbating. And I'm just like laughing, picturing it slowly loading the way that photos used to load when you would email them. And the daughter, thank God, went running to her mom and was like traumatized because she has now seen a grown man's dick. And the mom shut that shit down. Well, other children were not so lucky because this fuckface molested a couple kids. He was convicted and sent to jail for 6 years. Obviously, I think in an industry where there are lots of children, especially ones that are unsupervised, especially ones that are easily moldable. I don't want to talk shit about actors, but actors are people who have no real identity, and it allows them to easily escape into others' characters. Actors are vessels that allow themselves to be filled with the essence of someone else. That's why they're not creating their own media. They are just in cattle calls hoping to be picked to embody someone else because they're hollow, hollow vessels. And so Hollywood is a great place. If you're looking to manipulate, Hollywood's a great place for that because all these people who are empty on the inside are there just begging for an opportunity and willing to do anything to make it because they're fucking starving. They're starving artists. And now there's that element, and then they're also children. Children do what adults tell them to do. Children don't generally understand social norms because they're fucking children. They're brand new. You know how you're like, what are you new? Guess what? Children, they are fucking new. So children's media is probably a huge draw for pedophiles because now you have all this access to parents who are willing to look the other way because they're blinded by fame and fortune, and children who are easily manipulated, let alone child actors. So pedophiles are all up in that shit. And this guy was like, oh, I'm filled with Christ's love and a desire to fuck children, so I'm going to work with children at Nickelodeon. And somehow nobody saw this coming, which makes me really sad for those children. So he was sent to jail. The same year he was sent to jail, this other guy was also convicted of being a sexual pedophile. This guy's name is Brian Peck. He was a dialogue coach. And by the way, when I talked about Welcome Back, no, that was Dan Schneider. Okay, Brian Peck was a dialogue coach on the show. He was also a failed actor. He had also worked on Growing Pains, where there's some really chilling footage of him being a little too handsy with Leonardo DiCaprio. Why is anybody touching anybody that way? I'm not a toucher, so fucking feel free to enlighten me. But I would feel weird if literally anyone other than this child's parents were touching them the way Brian Peck was touching Leonardo DiCaprio. It's like he's like stroking his arms and like grabbing his muscles and making jokes about it, but like, I don't fucking play like that. What the fuck are you doing? Get your hands off that kid. You ain't friends like that because he's a kid and you're an adult and lines need to be drawn. Anyways, Brian Peck was a failed actor who then went on to work behind the scenes as a dialogue coach. Surprise, surprise, at Nickelodeon amongst children. Brian Peck strikes me as the type that doesn't realize he's an adult. And we see this a lot with pedophiles where they think that children are their peers. Michael Jackson's a great example and people fucking believed it. Like, he couldn't be molesting these boys. He's childlike. He thinks that he's a child. They're just doing kid stuff together. Well, guess what? He thinks these kids are their peers and therefore he doesn't realize that he's preying upon them. He's a fucking predator. Also, kids sexually experiment with each other, which can be healthy or unhealthy. When the age is the same and power dynamics are the same, it's different when one of them is 37 and one of them is 15, which is going to happen in this case. It doesn't matter if the 37-year-old thinks of himself as 15. I don't care that you have an annual pass to Disneyland and that your garage is decorated to look like Indiana Jones. No one gives a fuck because you're an adult. So this guy, Brian Peck, he came onto the scene playing a character called Pickle Guy, and he was like a platter of pickles and he was always eating pickles, which again, people posit is inherently sexual. The eating of a pickle, I don't know. Pickles are just funny. The word pickle is funny. Pickles are a funny thing. They're like these green slimy things floating in vats of brine. Like, I think you can eat pickles and have it not be sexual. I eat pickles all the time. I'm not thinking about sucking dick when I eat pickles. I don't picture people sucking dick when they eat pickles. Same thing with bananas. I love a banana. It doesn't feel like I've sucked a dick. It's nothing like eating a banana. Bananas just are like nice if you need a little energy boost. You need a little bit of carbs, some potassium. Let's fucking go. Get that banana. But they posit that this character, Pickle Guy, was sexual. I don't know. But Brian Peck, he starts working with young actor Drake Bell on The Amanda Show. And then Drake Bell's dad is his manager and he's on set. And he like really doesn't like what he's seeing with these two, that this guy's like getting handsy with his son, like the vibe is off. Brian Peck is not passing Drake Bell's dad's vibe check. And the dad is like trying to keep the kid away from this guy. And he's like, this isn't right. And he's like talking to other parents being like, what's up with this dude? And Brian Peck sees like, oh, this guy is trying to call me out on my shit. I'm going to drive a wedge between the kid and his dad. So Brian Peck starts telling Drake Bell, like, your dad's a bad manager. Your dad is bad for your career. Your dad's over controlling this or that. And Drake Bell believes it because he's a child and he doesn't know any better. And he wants to have a career. He's a musician. He's an actor. The world is his oyster. And he's not going to let his dad hold him back. Teenagers are prone to hating their parents. So like, it's not hard to throw fuel on that fire. So eventually, like, Drake Bell is at war with his dad. Like, you're ruining my career. I don't want you as my manager anymore. And the dad finally agrees to step down. Drake Bell wants to go live with his mom because his parents are divorced. And the dad tells the mom, like, listen, I don't want to be at war with my son. If he doesn't want me as my manager anymore, that's fine. I'll step down. But you need to make sure he is never alone with Brian Peck. There's something wrong with this guy. I don't trust him. Do not let Drake be alone with him. And the mom is a fucking retard. she's blinded by Hollywood, or maybe she's an alcoholic. I don't know, because we don't hear from her in the documentary. But she sounds like a real dumb bitch. Because as soon as Drake comes to live with her, she starts letting him sleep over at Brian Peck's apartment. Because they live in Orange County and Brian Peck lives in Hollywood. And rather than mom have to drive him around to auditions, it's in between the Amanda Show and Drake and Josh launching. So he's got it down, like 3 months of downtime before his own show starts filming. And he's auditioning for other stuff and has appointments in Hollywood. And the mom is like, well, yeah, Brian will take you. So you can just sleep at his house so you don't have to deal with that commute. Okay, first of all, like, an hour or two commute is not that big of a deal. I mean, obviously 4 hours a day of driving sucks. I know, I'm currently doing it in my homelessness. That's why I'm driving right now, to take my dog to my mom's house so I can go to work. But if the option is spend a lot of time in the car or let your kids sleep at a stranger's or an adult male's house, I'll spend a lot of time in the car, dude. We can get some audiobooks, or it's a great time to hold your kid hostage to get them to talk to you. But mom didn't do that. Mom's like, yeah, cool, go stay at Brian Peck's house. And the kid was like, this is awesome, Brian's my friend. Again, nobody is your fucking friend when you're 15 and they're 37. And Drake Bell wakes up one morning, he's sleeping on the couch, and Brian Peck is sexually assaulting him. And Brian Peck is like, I'm sorry, I carried away, I didn't know, it won't happen again, this or that, please don't tell anyone. It's a big mistake. And like, Drake Bell does the victim thing where it's like, well, I don't want to ruin this guy's life, so I guess I won't say anything. I don't want to ruin his life. It was a mistake. He's sorry. And I don't want to ruin my career. I don't want to be seen as a victim. That's the other thing. Victims don't want to go forward because people are fucking horrible to victims. And they're like, well, you were spending the night at his house. Obviously, you wanted to get fucked in the ass with an inanimate object. People are not kind to victims. And he didn't want to be seen as a victim or, you know, a queer or whatever. So he kept it to himself, but the assaults kept happening. And they escalated, and you can tell in the interview, he's really fucked up. And he's like, listen, like, just picture the worst thing anybody could do to a person. And that's what happened to me. And in the charges, it says, like, it's not just they did some mutual masturbation, they did some oral. Like, he was raped, he was penetrated, both by this dude's dick and inanimate objects. Like, he was tied up, he was restrained. Like, this kid was fucking assaulted. He was assaulted really, really bad. And he says, this is how fucking absent and shitty this dude's mom is. He's like, when I got a girlfriend, I just started spending as much time as possible at her house so that I wouldn't have to be alone with Brian. Like, he couldn't just go to his own house. So he's spending time at his girlfriend's house to avoid Brian Peck. And one day, Brian wanted to take him to Disneyland, and he was like, no. And he wasn't answering his cell phone. And then Brian called the girlfriend's house like 30 times. And the girlfriend's mom was like, this is not right. And she pulled him aside away from the girlfriend and was like, what is going on? Like, this is not right. Like, grown men don't call children this many times. Like, he's acting like a psychotic scorned lover. And Drake Bell said, no, nothing's happening. He's just weird. He's just obsessed with me. I just don't want to deal with him, whatever. And the girlfriend's mom calls Drake Bell's mom and is like, I don't know what's going on, but like, this is not right. Like, what the fuck? And you need to get him to a therapist. And his mom takes him to a therapist, and he denies that anything has happened because, again, doesn't want to ruin his career, doesn't want to be seen as a victim, doesn't want to disappoint anybody. And the therapist believes him. And about a year after all this, something happens, and all of a sudden he explodes and tells his mom everything. And then his mom files charges, and this guy is brought to justice. one of the big jaw drop moments in this docuseries is all the letters of support that were written in defense of Brian Peck, from famous celebrities, Ryder Strong, James Marsden, Will Friedle, Alan Thicke. And a lot of these are just like, he's a good guy. I've never seen him do anything wrong. A lot of these are people saying, you know, Brian's already suffered enough. This past year pending this trial has been terrible on him. He's suffered more than anyone has been to suffer. Clearly, he was just badgered and badgered until he broke down and gave in a moment of weakness. Like, they basically suggest that this 15-year-old hounded this 37-year-old for sex until the 37-year-old finally relented. Oh, sorry, that was my dog, guys. Finally relented and gave in and fucked him. Not that, like, I don't know. Like, it's crazy to think that anyone could even think that or believe that and be like, well, you know, Brian was a weak man. He, you know, he couldn't resist. This 15-year-old kept backing it up. And he was badgered into it. He wouldn't have done this. Like, no, dude, like, even if that is what happened, the adult is still guilty. That is still statutory rape. But, like, that's not what happened. Like, this was grooming that took place over the course of years. And then this kid was sexually assaulted again and again and again and again and again and again and again. You want to know what a big red flag is? This guy, Brian Peck, he would always have parties at his house because his house was all decorated and themed out. And in his themed out garage, which I think was supposed to look like Indiana Jones or something, it was made to look like something. He had a stack of letters from his pen pal. Do you want to know who his pen pal was? John Wayne Gacy. So he had a painting that he bought of John Wayne Gacy, one of his clown artworks. And then he had a stack of letters of correspondence. This was his pen pal. Yeah, why are we letting this guy work around children? One of his besties, his pen pal, is a child rapist and murderer. People who are obsessed with serial killers are really fucked up. I do think it's important to understand the psychology of criminals and pedophiles so we can learn to spot them and avoid them before they are able to crime on you. Like, I get it. I've done a lot of research on this podcast into the darker sides of the world. I've never felt the need to any of these cult leaders or sexual predators. I've never felt the need to slide into their DMs and strike up a conversation where I'm like, okay, I'm learning of how grooming works. I'm learning how you operated. And by sharing this story, we can prevent this from happening in the future. I don't need to talk to you. Like, I don't need to do that. The idea to on your free time, reach out to a serial killer and start correspondence is fucking crazy. Red flag. Like, that's not, like, cute or quirky. It's not somebody who in their free time makes, like, felted anime characters or somebody who, I'm trying to think of weird hobbies, collects, like, vintage pop bottle tops. This is, like, corresponding to a child rapist murderer. What the fuck? Like, red flags. And so I just think, like, where the fuck was his mom? And I feel so bad for his dad because his dad saw this coming. And then later, this poor kid, they don't talk about it in the documentary, but in the midst of all the trial stuff, he was in a really bad car accident, not his fault. And it, like, fractured several of his cervical vertebra. He needed jaw reconstruction surgery. His jaw was wired shut and he had 70 stitches in his face, which is really traumatic to anyone. Chronic pain, that's fucking an opioid addiction waiting to happen right there, let alone facial reconstruction. When you're in Hollywood and your face is your moneymaker, that had to have been traumatic. 5 years later, he got a DUI. That was his fault, obviously. And then 10 years after that, he was charged with inappropriate, like, sexual conduct with a minor, and they don't touch too much on the charges, and it's very vague what I could find. Basically, this woman claims she started DMing with him when she was 12, and that they communicated for 3 years, and then they would meet at concerts, and that he had sexual contact with her. He claims that she was messaging with him. When he found out her age, he quit messaging her. And then she started showing up at his events and buying like meet and greet tickets. And, you know, he didn't realize, like, he's just at a meet and greet. He's posing for pictures with this girl. He didn't realize it was the girl that he had exchanged messages with earlier. He claims their messages were benign. She claims they exchanged videos and they cybered. There was no digital evidence of that. So none of that was charged against him because, again, not saying it didn't happen. It's just saying that they were unable to find digital record of this. So like their message history, the beat off videos, they were unable to locate that. So again, he says he did see her in person. He didn't realize it was some girl that he messaged with years ago. She says, oh, when I went to these meet and greets, he fucked me afterwards. He pled no contest to like basically some sort of like child neglect charges. He's not a convicted sex offender or predator. If he did go on to become one, we could see that because hurt people hurt people. I'm not saying it excuses it, but people who are molested as children, it fucks them up. R. Kelly was molested as a child, does not excuse his behavior, but it damages them, often permanently. And so again, he was not convicted of any sort of sex crimes, but these were charges and allegations made against him. He's super broken. I feel really bad for his dad who wanted to prevent it. I don't fully understand how people are just so fucking dumb and negligent. People don't snatch up random kids and rape them. Like, most child sexual assault is done by family members or friends of the family. It's a grooming situation. And so many families have, like, that uncle that people are like, don't leave anyone alone with Uncle James. And like, I have a friend who was molested by an uncle, and it was like a joke in the family, like, oh, don't go over to Uncle James's house, or don't let your kids around Uncle James. But like, he was, and he was sexually assaulted repeatedly as a child. And to him, like, he's like, what fucks me up is like, everyone knew it was this open secret, this open joke. But like, obviously people knew they were joking about it. So then why was I left alone with him? Why was I ever brought over his house? Why was that guy invited to the barbecue? And I don't know. It's just crazy. Like, I think about, again, like, I was raised in a house with a pedophile who never molested me. Thank God. After my parents divorced, my mom's had her boyfriend move in, and his ex-brother-in-law was a convicted child predator, and he was in town, and my mom's boyfriend said, can he please stay at our place? He's a trucker. He needs a place to stay overnight. And my mom said yes. My mom knew that he was a convicted child sexual predator, and I was 15, and she let this guy sleep at our house. Now, I woke up to him, and I wasn't told this, by the way. I did not know he was a sexual predator. I woke up to him knocking on my door and asking if he could borrow a shirt to sleep in. And I gave him a shirt and closed and locked my door because I thought that was weird. It was also a Nirvana Unplugged t-shirt, original printing, that I never got back. But I thought that was weird. And then later I woke up and he was outside my window, like, and I'm like half asleep and I see him. He was a black man. He was a dark black man. And I see eyes staring in my window. And I didn't really know how to process any of that because I was 15 and it didn't really make sense to me because I didn't know about the world or predators and I didn't know that he was a predator. So I just thought like, God, this fucking guy, my mom's boyfriend's brother-in-law or whatever, borrowing a shirt, stealing a shirt and then spying in my window. What's that about? Like, but like my mom knew better, right? Like she knew this guy was a convicted child sexual predator and she allowed him in her home with her 15-year-old daughter. Like, and so I just wonder what the fuck is up. Like, thank God, again, nothing happened to me, but what the fuck? Why are people ignoring warning signals when it's right in front of their fucking eyes? And again, this is an example, like I'm old enough to know that you trust no bitch. I went on a couple of dates with a guy once and we were at his house watching a movie, chit-chatting, and I said something he didn't like or whatever. And then I was like, dude, I don't want to fucking talk about this anymore. I'm done. And he kept pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. And I was like, I'm going to go. And he blocked his door to keep me from leaving his house. And that was scary as fuck. And I was able to get out of it and like never talk to him again or whatever. But, you know, situations like that are like, yeah, I don't want to be alone with anybody unless I fucking know them inside and out. I ain't going to your house unless I really know you. And there's a bunch of people there. You're not going to know where I live unless I fucking know you. I keep my shit, my world, despite having a podcast, that goes out to the entire internet, my like real life world is small. I keep it tight. I'm not trying to like, you know what I mean? I don't feel, and I don't walk around the world like super suspicious of others or like I travel alone. I don't worry about that shit, but like, that's when I'm in public spaces. So public, this is the thing. People, since the pandemic and people are socially isolated and they're so suspicious of the public world and the public spaces, I'm not scared of that. I'm not scared about walking into a store. I don't really care if it's a bad neighborhood. There's people out on the street. I'm good. You know what I worry about is what's going on at home. You know what I mean? Most people are murdered by someone they know. Most people are sexually assaulted by somebody they know. So I don't have like stranger danger, whatever. I have behind closed doors danger. So I don't get behind closed doors unless I know you really fucking well. I think how many people pass for normal and then behind closed doors, you find out that like their spouse beats them or like there's drug addiction, like darkness, fucking darkness happens behind closed doors. Out on these streets, sun's out, I feel good. And I think that's something to like think about is like, maybe your kid can be on set and everything's fine. I'm not letting my kid go over to the house of somebody who works on set with them. How many people you're like, all right, I worked with these people for 10 years. I've worked for this company. I know their names. But like, if you were to go over to their house, you'd be like, what the fuck? What the fuck? You don't know how people live. And a lot of people, they don't be living right. So again, trust no bitch. All child roles should be played by grown adults, or all children's media should be animated and voiced by adult actors. If kids want to fucking tap dance in the school talent show, that's fine. They can wait till they're 18 to go get a job. You don't need to have your kids doing that shit. You know what I mean? Let kids be kids. Let them grow up amongst other kids. And then when they're ready to be adults, they can be adults. And that's all I fucking got for you. Anyways, and I'm fucking hate that I had to record that podcast twice because I'm not trying to spend that much time talking about pedophiles. Happy hump day.